I live in this tiny apartment here in Japan, and it is 4:08 a.m. Wednesday, January 20th, my time right now. And I'm not joking. Like, I was recording a really good clip for this question, and like someone living above me, no idea who it is, just I live in an apartment building, and the person above me, like, they flush the toilet so fucking loud, I literally like had to just stop the question. Like, I could have edited the clip, but I'm just like, no, I had to like actually stop the question. So now, coming back to this clip, all right? That was a nice intro. Why don't we just get into it now, right? Well, look, this vignette, this is going to be a diagnosis of mononucleosis. Mono is actually a bit of a challenging diagnosis based on patient clinical picture alone, because the findings aren't really specific for anything. You could have fever, night sweats, weight loss in many things, including cancer, right? Or even in leukemia. And of course, there's lymphadenopathy here, and that could be reflective of many conditions. So, as I said, the patient's clinical picture in and of itself is never really too specific, where you're like, oh, obviously that's mono. So we have to keep reading. And we look at the biopsy of the lymph node, and we can see negative for CD5, positive for CD19 and 20. You're probably like, no idea what that fucking means. Just take two steps back, chill out for 2 seconds. And CD19, CD20, these are B cell specific markers, okay? CD5 negativity means this is not CLL, okay? Chronic lymphocytic leukemia. I'm not inserting that into this question because I'm trying to be cool, or I'm trying to make this like nitpicky or weird. This is actually on NBMEs for step one, where CLL, the lymphocytes, can be positive for CD5 and CD23. And I've seen mono questions where they'll say negative for CD5, positive for CD19 and 20. And yeah, the negative for CD5 just means it's not CLL, okay? Not that the answer choices even relate to it, but I'm just giving you a bit of an NBME style question that I've written here. So CD19/20, it's EBV that invades B cells. That's our answer. About 90% of the time, mono is due to EBV infection. About 10% of the time, it's due to CMV, okay? And CMV, based on what I've read in the literature, there are no significant data to indicate that it overwhelmingly infects B cells, okay? So it's EBV that predominantly infects B cells. And then this is really important. This is crucial. EBV infects B cells. Once these B cells are infected with EBV, there are reactive lymphocytes that are T cells. CD8 positive T cells are reactive lymphocytes that then will attack the EBV infected B cells. So I'm emphasizing this because we say B cells and T cells. I don't want you to confuse. USMLE specifically wants you to know EBV infects B cells. However, the atypical lymphocytes that you've heard about with mono are CD8 plus T cells, not B cells. And they're specifically called reactive T cells. So the NBME slash USMLE will have reactive versus non-reactive, T cell versus B cell. You just say, well, the atypical lymphocyte is reactive and it's a T cell, CD8 positive, okay? So the other thing to note is that the heterophile antibody test, also known as monospot test, is positive for EBV mono, but not for CMV. Why it's called heterophile antibody test, very fucking weird. For whatever reason, we will develop antibody. A patient who has EBV mono will develop antibodies that cross-react with horse and sheep RBCs. Extremely fucking weird, as I said, but that's why it's called heterophile antibody test. Is hetero binds to many, has its file, has an affinity for many antigens, not just EBV, but also horse and sheep RBCs, okay? But we don't get a positive heterophile antibody slash monospot test with CMV. It's only EBV. The other thing is CMV can cause linear ulcers, okay? Linear slash confluent ulcers of the oropharynx. So I don't want to get too tangential, but the USMLE likes you to know that herpes is punched out ulcers. CMV is linear ulcers. And they're linear because you'll get smaller ulcers, small ulcers that become confluent. So they become linear, like striae. So they'll give you, for instance, if this were CMV mono, they could have given you, or I could have written a question where it sounds like this. And then I say, rather than these biopsy findings, I tell you there's confluent ulcers seen in the posterior oropharynx, and that would be CMV. And CMV can also cause positive cold agglutinins. It can cause IgM antibodies against RBCs, leading to a cold autoimmune hemolytic anemia. That's something else the USMLE will do, is they'll give you, for instance, CMV mono, and then they'll say the pathogen that's causing this condition can also cause what? And the answer is hemolytic anemia. Very difficult, okay? But CMV and mycoplasma, notably, are two pathogens that can cause IgM against RBCs, leading to a cold autoimmune hemolytic anemia. And those IgM that attack RBCs at colder temperatures are called cold agglutinins, okay? So EBV is not going to do that. But EBV does lots of other things. You know, it's related to lymphoma, also related to nasopharyngeal carcinoma, okay? And EBV, CMV are both part of herpes viridae. So it's DNA viruses and icosahedral nucleocapsid, and they're enveloped and they're linear. Okay, so a lot I can chat about. Just want to stay concise, but of course, CMV, most common organism transmitted via organ transplantation and blood transfusions, and owl eyes on biopsy, right? But this question answer is EBV, just to be very fucking clear in case I've been chatting too much. Now, looking at the other answer choices, Barnard-Hensley, it's going to cause two conditions for USMLE. Number one being just simple cat scratch disease, and number two, bacillary angiomatosis or bacillary angiomatosis, which will resemble Kaposi sarcoma. But they're going to, rather than giving you human herpes virus 8 in someone who has, they'll give you a patient who has HIV, and they'll show you Kaposi sarcoma appearing lesions, violaceous lesions on the skin. And you're looking for human herpes virus 8, HHV-8, which causes Kaposi sarcoma, but it's not listed. And you're like, what the fuck? But you'll see it'll be all bacteria, and you'll see Barnard-Hensley there. And you're like, oh, that's right. Barnard-Hensley can cause bacillary or bacillary angiomatosis, which presents similar to Kaposi sarcoma in immunocompromised patients. So that's one of the ways Barnard-Hensley, and then cat scratch disease, of course. They can ask that very difficult. They can say a 7-year-old girl has a papule on her finger, and biopsy or gram stain shows pleomorphic bacilli that's stained with silver stain. And that's all they say. They don't say anything about a cat or dog. And, you know, bacilli obviously is not going to be Sporothrix schenki. Students would be like, oh my God, papule on the finger. That's like Sporothrix schenki. It's not, okay? I mean, they said fucking bacilli, and they stain with silver. I mean, that's, so Barnard-Hensley would be your answer there. That's cat scratch disease. Now, Brucella, okay, weird sounding, weird organisms, usually wrong, but Brucella, brucellosis, that's undulating fever, okay? So you get that from goat products. If they ever give you a Brucella question on USMLE, very fucking unlikely, but if they ever did, they would tell you goat milk or goat cheese in some capacity. Can also cause neuro brucellosis, just neurologic findings in that patient. Coxiella burnetii, this causes Q fever. You get coxiella from cattle, placenta, cattle in general, but other farm animals, okay? So whilst resources will be like, oh my God, coxiella, that's like cattle, or Francisella tularensis is rabbits, or Chlamydia satachi is birds, OMG. Like, we make these tight associations, but like, they can just tell you, like, guy has a pet goat or pet sheep, and he has Q fever, okay? I mean, they can make difficult questions, but as I said before, Brucella is goat milk or goat cheese, coxiella usually cattle, okay, but farm animals, and this will cause Q fever, which is going to be an atypical pneumonia. Lots of different presentations of coxiella. Even very rarely, it can cause Q fever endocarditis, and I've actually seen that in real life when I was doing my ICU term in fourth year medicine. But Coxiella burnetii, once again, this is just going to be, this is actually Weill Felix negative. That's a detail you could know about Coxiella burnetii, is that it's technically in one of the, it can be considered technically a type of rickettsial infection. So rickettsial infections like Rickettsia prowazekii, epidemic typhus, Rickettsia typhi, endemic typhus, Rickettsia tsutsugamushi, which is scrub typhus, those will have a positive Weill-Felix test, which means when you develop antibodies against those rickettsial infections, they'll cross-react with Proteus O antigen. Why? No fucking idea, okay? But that's called a Weill-Felix test, and Coxiella burnetti is notably negative. Has a negative Weill-Felix test, and they will literally say that. You think I'm joking? I'm not. The same way I have like negative CD5 in this question, which sounds weird. As I said, that means not CLL. They could just tell you, like, dude has a fever, and there was no cross-reactivity with Proteus O antigen, and they're just trying to they're just pushing you in the direction that this is Q fever, Coxiella. So look, that's it for this question, all right? Mononucleosis, this will wax and wane over the course of the patient's life. EBV will go latent, EBV and CMV, they'll go latent and will present as recurring fatigue, okay? But the initial presentation will present as generally fever and diffuse lymphadenopathy, just presents as a very, overwhelming malaise/coryza, okay? So maybe I shouldn't use the word coryza, that's more an association with viral infections, but generally just malaise. And lymphadenopathy, that's more accurate of a description here. So look, we could do a 70-minute oral presentation on all the little details, but this clip's already been long enough, so that's it.